Welcome to the Rare Disorder Podcast. I'm your host, Shivani, and this is the 11th episode of my Meet a Fighter series, so let's dive right into it. So today, I'm going to be addressing a rare polygenic disease. My guest in my podcast today has an undiagnosed polygenic disease that has not been named yet, and she and her doctors are doing further research on it. We will be getting more information on this during the interview segment with Robin. So, a polygenic disease is a genetic disorder that is caused by the combined action of more than one gene. Some examples of common polygenic conditions include hypertension, coronary heart disease, and diabetes. Now, I'm so excited to welcome Robin Powers, who is a fighter of a polygenic disease. I am so excited to have you on my podcast today. To start, I was wondering if you could talk about an average day in your life with this rare condition.
Sure. Thank you so very much for having me. I have to say that it's truly an honor and a privilege. So the disease that I have, at least it's proposed, so my doctors, you know, are leaning towards the fact that I'm correct, and the National Research for Rare Disorders does have polygenic functional syndromes listed on there. So just of methylations would be type that I believe that I have, but it's supposed to be fully proven. But an average day in my life, normally I wake up, and it depends on how much pain I'm in. So, like, if I'm in so much pain that I can't really bear it, I take my medication, and then I try to go back to sleep, and then I wake up like I'm just starting the day again. It's kind of funny. I call it my refresh or my reset for the day. And then, you know, then I'll take my other medications I need to take, you know, and then I'll be taking care of my son as well, because I'm a single mom and a caregiver for a son who has Ehlers-Danlos syndrome type 3, which is something that I also have, which is also kind of nasty in its own. It runs on both sides of the family, so I'm just hoping that my son has a mild presentation and continues to, because at least he has a mild presentation of it. And then I'm trying to juggle that with trying to make money by selling soaps, because I happen to have a soap company. It's soapingforacure.company.site. I actually donate back 10% of the proceeds to rare disease nonprofits. And then actually I also have a nonprofit of my own that just was opened. I'm a co-founder of the nonprofit named Rare Ability, which works to mindfully create and empower communities from the classroom to the boardroom. And so I use that also as a way and a platform of talking about, you know, my struggles and my disease and, you know, the diversity in it. And the fact that there's actually diversity within every single disease, which I find to be very fascinating. So let's see. Also, I have a per diem job as a clinical consultant. So it doesn't have a ton of hours, but it's got a cool name. I think, you know, at least I get to, you know, be the differential diagnostician, I guess, as a consultant basis for a psychiatrist, because a lot of the times rare disease patients get, you know, pushed off to a psychiatrist, which is really not where they belong. Although I'm sure that a psychiatrist can help them. It's just, you know, the psychiatrist can't provide them, you know, pain management or something if that's what they need. So that's kind of where I step in. And then I'm like, well, you know, doctor, you know, not to my doctor, but I go to their primary and I'm like, you know, actually these problems, you know, point towards a rare disease. So while I do understand that I'm not a doctor, I am an advocate, and I have been for 18 years, but I do think that you should check in on this. And normally they'll check in on it, and normally I end up being correct just because I've been practicing this whole differential diagnostic odyssey game like for so long. Because in Buffalo there's like almost, I call it the pits of medical care, because there's kind of no doctors that really know what's going on. They're all like, I don't know what that means, I don't know how to treat that. That's what I keep on hearing. So for this disease, actually, for the polygenic mutational syndrome of methylations, it's caused by a buildup in my system of you know, waste products from the nitric acid cycle, and then they bind to vitamin B12 so that your body actually doesn't absorb vitamin B12, and then without that, you lose the ability to form new memories, and you lose the ability to be cognitive most of the time, and you end up falling asleep and passing out and stuff like that, and your nerve pain just goes crazy. Like, I'm not sure if it goes that way with everybody, if they don't already have nerve pain. But since I already have it, it trumps it up like tons so very much. So I do a B12 injection every single week, and I separate it by 30 minutes. So I do, you know, a half of the vial first, and then I separate that by 30 minutes. I do that as an intramuscular injection. And the reason why I do it this way is something that I actually had to come up with, because at first it was not working. And my doctor was like, I don't know how to treat this. I'm not treat this. And I was like, don't worry, I think that I know how. And I separated it by 30 minutes, because if you do it first, and then it like washes your blood, you know, by binding, your B12 will bind to all of those waste products, and then that cleans your blood out from all those waste products, and then you can inject it again, and then your body will actually be able to use the B12, and it actually works. And my doctor was fascinated. She was like, oh my goodness, don't explain to me what you did because it'll be too complicated and I don't want to understand it because it's just some of the stuff that I say she doesn't really understand. It's over at the top. I understand. But she was like, please do not stop doing what you're doing because it's, you know, actually kind of a miracle that you got your B12 levels to go up because she was just doing it with the normal protocol, which was not working. So I guess that's kind of an average day in my life. And I'm trying to, you know, find a job that's, you know, at least 30 hours a week because I happen to have second eight and they will match, you know, my whatever money I make, you know, if I can pay, if I work 30 hours a week and I can pay the rent and they will match that rent and put in an escrow account. And then allow me to buy a home in the future. So even though I'm super duper disabled, it's just so tempting of an offer that I'm trying very hard with my undergraduate degree, which I got in biochemical pharmacology of rare diseases, to, you know, get some type of job. So I have the clinical consulting. And if I could just, I don't know, maybe find a few other doctors that need that help, you know, that would be great. Or, you know, trying other avenues. Like I'm looking online to see if there's, you know, some type of job with Ultragenyx because they gave me their card and they said, always remember that you have friends in Ultragenyx. So I was on my way to a rare disease conference. So I would say my day basically regards, it's just me trying to keep all of the balls that I'm juggling, you know, in the air without dropping one. And it's really hard to do. And people ask me how I do it. And my answer is, I don't know because I have to. Mm-hmm. That's the real answer. I must.
All right. And then is there anything you feel that other people should know about your disorder?
Yes. Actually, I feel like it should be less, I mean, I know it's an ultra rare disease, so it doesn't have, it's an ultra rare subset of diseases, so they don't have a lot of attention. But there's a lot of talk in the medical community about lots of patients that are presenting with problems with methylation diseases. Like they're not, their bodies don't methylate things properly. I happen to be an ultra rare metabolizer of CPY450D, which is a really obnoxious because that's about like 90% of the medications that they use, you know, like for treating pain or anxiety or chemotherapy, like just, it crosses so many levels, it's ridiculous. And it controls 25% of the things that I take into my body, like even just air or water. Like, it, you know, they're all ultra rapidly metabolized out of my body. So if you have something like that, and your doctor has mentioned something about methylations, have them check your B12 level and have them check it a few times because sometimes it'll show up as looking falsely okay. Because it's only looking at your B12 level that's in your bloodstream at that time and not what you have stored. So I would say get your B12 level checked. See if you're an ultra rapid metabolizer of CPY450D. If you are, also see if you are a carrier of the mother-father genetic mutation, which causes problems with folate. And then that's what makes it polygenic, because there's two different, genetically matched things that I have that are very close together. So that's what makes it a polygenic mutational disorder, because the two, you know, genetic variations work against me, but together, you know, against me. So, I mean, so that's kind of where that comes from. So just, if you have something that sounds kind of similar to me, I mean, you can get in contact with me. You know, I'm sure that there'll be some listing somewhere on how to contact me, and I don't mind if people contact me. Mm-hmm. But I think it's a very under-recognized and under-known thing, because I just happen to have figured it out myself. I was like, if I'm not Ehlers and I'm not Danlos, because I also have Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, and I hate that name because nobody ever remembers it. I was like, how will I name this? So I'm just thinking in my head, I'm like, mutational syndrome. So then I look it up and I see an ultra rare subset of diseases. I'm like, wow, look at that. And I'm like, of methylations. And then I see that that's not named in that, but there's a whole bunch of questions about methylation problems with people, but there's never been a definitive diagnosis. So I feel like this probably affects a lot more people than is known, and it may not be an ultra rare disease. It might just be ultra not diagnosed. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like with EDS, it's ultra not mm-hmm. diagnosed, so that's kind of rare. So yeah. I guess that's what I feel like people should probably know.
All right. And then how are you coping with it?
That's an interesting question. I cope with it. I mean, it's hard to cope with because when you're undiagnosed fully and you're only kind of partially diagnosed and you have all these other ridiculous diagnoses, I'm still trying to juggle all those other problems. So I also have central pain syndrome, which is kind of like, I think it's called, what is it? It's CRPS. I can't remember what it's called because I keep on changing the name on things. But it's kind of like that disease that, you know, has like a pain level of like, you know, really high. It's like complex reflex, or I can't remember, reflex muscular dystrophy, something like that. I'm very close with the naming. I'm sorry if I'm off, but central pain syndrome is very similar to that. So it's like that just without the skin changes. So I have that I have to deal with. It happened because I broke my arm. So I've got to deal with that. And I've got to deal with Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, familial dysautonomia. and all these other problems. So I'm just dealing with this the best that I can by just trying to find the information that I can, getting connected with the Undiagnosed Disease Network, and then, you know, trying to get my doctors to run the tests that I need done, and, you know, going in there with my, you know, benefits versus risks ratios, like I've been doing for 18 years and advocating for myself. So I guess I cope with it by advocating for my life. Like I always have, I've always said I advocate for my life, and I've been doing this since I was like 7 years old by, you know, speaking and saying, you know, there's something wrong, you know, because I feel like the best advocate for yourself is honestly going to be you. But if you don't have a good advocate, you know, like if you feel like sometime at some point you might be out of commission, make sure that you name somebody else to be an advocate for you on like a living will. It's something that people forget, and then you're left just in the hands of the doctors, and then nobody can advocate for you. So I don't know, that's one tip that I would also like to say, is if you're in this kind of situation or any medical situation, even if you're not in one, it's just smart to name somebody else if you're not available to talk, you know, who can speak for you.
Mm-hmm. All right, and then
I'm trying to deal with it. I'm working on that. It's an odyssey in its own, you know, to deal with mm-hmm. something. I don't know.
Yeah. And then another question I had was, have you ever encountered a major struggle with this condition, and how were you able to overcome it?
Sure. I guess the major struggle with it was that, you know, I had a very good proposal written out and everything, and I'm actually going to be using it to apply to UPenn and Berkeley and a few other medical schools. You know, it's just that my doctors didn't understand it, and they said it was over their head, and then also my you know, my advisors and stuff, since I'm not at a medical school right now, I'm at a liberal arts college. I'm at a state school because they're very good with accommodations and I'm disabled. You know, they didn't really understand it. So the biggest struggle that I had was that nobody knew what I was talking about. And my doctor's like, but I don't know how to treat that. And I was like, well, you know what? I do. So, I mean, like, the biggest struggle that I've always had with any of these diseases is that I had to come in with all of the knowledge, even though I was very young, you know, and I'm a female, so they don't want to believe I'm in pain in any way, because for some reason I think that females can't feel pain, or people that look younger can't feel pain. They feel like pain is like a name, or like a, I'm sorry, not a name, an age limit on it, or like, I don't know, if you look healthy, then you can't be in pain or something. It's ridiculous. So in order to defeat all of those, you know, bad mindsets, I came in with all of the knowledge that I could possibly arm myself with, and that's kind of how I've overcome any struggle that I've had. I try and make up with it with knowledge that, you know, the doctors in Buffalo at least don't have. Because I don't think that it's that nobody knows about this. I just know that Buffalo is kind of like the pits of the medical community. Sorry, Buffalo. I love you, Buffalo. But we need to, you know, strengthen up our resources on research and stuff like that. Because we even have a National Institute of Health here for rare cancer. And they don't realize that they're really just a rare disease center and just don't do any rare disease research. So, you know, it's just, I've always had to overcome it with so much knowledge that it actually annoys people. And I don't mean for it to. It's just that I had to learn so very much. Otherwise, I would get shut down every single time. And that's how I overcame.
All right. That's really great that you do your own research and really advocating for yourself. And I feel like that's, like, with a lot of rare conditions, like, doctors just don't have that much knowledge on a rare condition.
I mean, they don't have enough time to learn about it. They get, like, a 15-minute little paragraph, and that's just not enough, so I can't blame them.
Yeah, I 100% agree. And, like, honestly, you know what your body's telling you. Like, always listen to your body, and, like, they can't feel what you're feeling. So I think it's really great that you're, doing your own research and bringing your own information to the table.
My doctor actually, he kind of primed me to do this, because at the beginning he was like, okay, so when you come back in a month, I want you to come back with, you know, the newest, hottest research. So he would actually have me on purpose research every single month. So that's kind of how I started to begin to research so very much, because I guess he was kind of training me to become a doctor, I think, in a way, because he kind of hinted at that when he found out that I was looking at medical schools. So I think that thing to do, to, you know, or do as much research as you can and understand it in as depth, you know, as you can. And even if you don't understand it in full, it's still definitely going to help the doctors.
Yeah, so you kind of briefly touched on this when you were discussing your advocacy and stuff like that, but if any, what are some initiatives that you take to raise awareness?
Some initiatives that I take to raise awareness about not just this condition but all rare diseases. Participate in the rare disease legislative advocates when they do the Rare Disease Week and then Rare Across America. I do participate in those meetings, and the one thing that I've found to be the most effective strategy ever, and when I go on these, you know, meetings on the Hill or whatever, whether they're tele meetings or they're in person, is that one time I couldn't get anything to pass, and then I remembered, I was like, okay, so who am I speaking with? Oh, I'm speaking with public policy, LA. So then I reformatted it into a public health policy that, you know, addressed everybody. So then instead of just being like, this is a rare disease policy, I was like, no, this is a public health policy, and that's why you need to pass this, because it affects not just me, not just 10% of the population, but it will affect all of the population, because I explained telehealth and how by enabling that, they would be enabling social distancing. Mm-hmm. So that would create, you know, a flattening of the curve for the pandemic. So I know I kind of just came up with this on the fly, because they were just saying no. So I mean, I would say one really smart thing, you know, is to just, I don't know, to wing it, but then to, you know, take a step back and take that extra second, even if you feel like you don't have it, you do. They'll give you that extra second to think, just to reformat your brain. Like if you're getting lots of no's when you're trying to advocate for something, reformat your thinking and see if maybe you can, you know, put it on a stage or a platform that they'll understand better. Because that was just really amazing that they ended up being like, oh, I understand now. I understand what you're saying now. We're going to get the big guy to sign off on this. And before it was a total no. So that's one thing that I do. Then I also do lots of advocacy by myself. I also am part of a nonprofit called Rare Ability. And, you know, it works to, you know, mindfully empower. And that's by mindfully empower, we do mean through advocacy and by teaching, you know, different ways of doing advocacy, because there is a diversity within advocacy, which is a speaking topic that I've actually, you know, been pitching, because it's a good one, because honestly, there's a lot of diversity within advocacy, because there's so many different ways that you can stand up for yourself, that you can, you know, speak and say, you know, how you're feeling. There's just so many different ways to do that, though. And I think it's beautiful the way that our, you know, community and the rare disease community, how we all do it differently, but we all end up owning it at the end. You know what I mean? I mean, I just feel like there's so many advocates that do it all differently, but we all do it differently and beautifully. You know what I mean? And I would never take away from anyone else's unique way of doing it, because I think that it's just very awesome, you know, that people can do it their own way and it works beautifully. And it's just, I don't know, I'm just amazed by our community. I think that we show a lot of strength. So we may be weak, you know, alone, but I guess together we are very strong, I feel. Mm-hmm. We're 10%.
Yeah, I 100% agree. Like, the advocacy on Instagram especially is, like, really strong. Yeah. Like, there's so many different, like, platforms people do it through as well. Like, for example, for me, I do a podcast, and I know other people are doing, like, videos, Instagram accounts, nonprofits, stuff like that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I
getting onto a nonprofit, my friend was just like, I'll take your, you know, intellectual currency, which is what I call it, because I actually was not middle class or anything. I was poverty level. So in order to defeat the poverty, I had to learn all this extra knowledge. Mm-hmm. So she's, you know, she took my intellectual currency, you know, as part of the nonprofit for me, I guess, you know, in a way, because I couldn't pay right away, and I'm going to pay her back for the other half when I can. Mm-hmm. But it was kind of cool that she was willing to understand that, I'm sorry, I didn't come from, you know, a background where I have the money to give you right now, but she still wanted me to be the co-founder because she likes my ideas, which is very, you know, it's a big honor when other people like your ideas and they understand what you're saying and they agree with what you're saying. I find that to be a very big honor personally.
Yeah, that's great. Like, do you guys have an Instagram account for this nonprofit?
Actually, not for this nonprofit, but I will start one for it because I've been trying to. Keep on asking her, did you start one yet? And she's like, no. And I was like, okay, because she's kind of like taking the lead on this. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I'm allowed to still do stuff. So I think that I'm going to set up the Instagram account, and I'm just going to be like, well, I set up an Instagram account for us so that we have some kind of, you know, voice, you know, beyond just, you know, the podcast that we do. And then on Clubhouse, oh, it's very big on Clubhouse. We've got a Clubhouse room for Rare Ability. And then we're going to, like, divide it, but I have my own, probably, and then she has her own. She does mindfulness-based advocacy with positivity and stuff like that, and I just kind of do logic-based advocacy with clinical information, so, like, I could probably be more positive and more mindful about it, and I know that I have to work on that, but it's just never something I learned, so that's why I have her focus on that, because that's her, you know, that's what she knows best, and what I know best is more of the clinical side, you know, so we make a good pair, but, you know, we just do things a little bit differently, and that's why the diversity of it, I believe, is very beautiful.
Yeah, so when it gets set up, you can definitely send me a link, and I'll help it get more exposure and stuff like that, so it can...
Oh, thank you. That's so very kind.
All right, and then just to, like, kind of close out now, I was wondering if there were any resources you would like to share that you have come across to help other people with rare conditions in general, or the same condition as you?
Yeah, that's written down, actually, just for people in general. So The one big resource that I found that was very helpful, and they're very nice people, is Undiagnosed Disease Network. And people don't normally know about this because, like, say you go to a doctor's office and they can't diagnose you. They're not going to know to refer you to the Undiagnosed Disease Network, and that there's a nonprofit that will actually help you get a diagnosis that works with, you know, top hospitals like Johns Hopkins, Stanford, and stuff like that. And, you know, they can do it remotely right now, I believe. You know, but at sometimes, you know, they can fly you out there with, like, Wings of Hope and stuff like that. So, I mean, that's an excellent resource. Also, there's grants through NORD for COVID, and then also for caregiving, and then also for, you know, medications and stuff like that. So definitely check out grants on NORD's website. There's also Global Genes. So if you have a nonprofit and you partner with them on the Foundation Alliance, then you're eligible for different grants. So, and then also one thing that I found, honestly, to be very effective, and I know it's silly because it's my own soap company, but I made it because I was going through chemo and my skin was peeling off and my advisor's skin was peeling off, and it's very painful to have your skin peeling off in sheets, literally. So I developed a formulation of soap, you know, that was very mild and gentle and could be used all over the body that, you know, stopped their skin from peeling off in sheets. Like, it was coming off, like, literally in a sheet. It was, like, really eerie. It looked like a skin, like, of, like, a snake, you know what I mean? Like, that's mm-hmm. how much. So, like, really ridiculous. So, I don't know. So I started doing the soaping for a cure. Yeah, soaping for a cure. Not company, not site. I don't know. That's just a webpage. But, you know, I started making these soaps, and I would honestly suggest that if people change, like, if they've got, like, a rare skin condition, like, because a lot of diseases are connective tissue diseases, or they involve the skin in some way, because your skin is, well, huge. It's the biggest organ in your body. So, I mean, if they have some type of problem with that, it doesn't matter if you use my soap, but I just recommend that you switch, like, a more mild soap, and you'll probably find a lot less problems with your skin. Mm-hmm. If you have skin, I just have a lot of skin problems. But if you switch to more natural products, I just feel like it works a lot better with our bodies, because our bodies don't like to deal with any extra, you know, additives that aren't needed, you know what I mean? And mm-hmm. our bodies really don't need any extra additives that aren't needed just for color or for scent, you know what I mean? So mm-hmm. I just try and keep it up to a minimum. And I found this to be very effective because it stops my skin from peeling off. It stopped my lupus rashes from, like, taking all my hair away. It was, like, really bad. I mean, I could even send you pictures and you'll be like, whoa, because it was very shocking how bad that. So, I mean, switching to more natural products has been very beneficial to me. And then the Undiagnosed Disease Network, and then, you know, using GARD and the National Institute of Health and Global Genes, and just, you know, connecting with all of the nonprofits that you can that could possibly help you with, you know, your problem, and then getting in good with their public administration and their leadership, you know, making friends with the leadership. That always is very helpful, because then it's sometimes very helpful to have friends in high places, I have to say, you know, because mm-hmm. then sometimes you get help that maybe you wouldn't have been able to get help with otherwise. So, mm-hmm. you know, make those connections, network, and put yourself out there. And don't worry about, you know, what's going to happen, because at the end, you're just doing your best to save your life. You're just doing your best to advocate for your life. So don't feel sad if somebody's mean to you, because people are mean to me sometimes. And I just am like, you know what? I'm just trying to save my life. So if you don't like how I'm trying to do it, that's fine. We can advocate in different corners, because there's enough room for everybody, you know? Mm-hmm. Advocate for yourself, and don't care what other people have to say if they're upset about it, because it's your life and that's what you're advocating for. And sometimes I feel like people forget that, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. That if you tell them, but not to advocate a certain way, that you're taking away from them advocating for their life, and that's their own option. You know what I mean? That's our own, well, right, actually. It's not just a privilege. It's a right for us to advocate for our lives. You know what I mean? And to tell doctors how we mm-hmm. feel. So I feel like the most helpful thing in my entire life, I would say, was me standing up for myself and saying, you know what? I don't care if you guys can't find a diagnosis. I don't give up on myself. So I'm not going to accept you guys just putting me on pain medication just to treat the pain, and then just not figuring out the cause, because who knows? Maybe there's an underlying mechanism that we can treat in some other way. You know what I mean? So mm-hmm. don't give up on yourself. I don't know. Advocate for yourself and don't give up, no matter how hard it gets. I mean, I end up in tears some nights, but I still keep on doing it because I know it's the best thing for me.
Yep, that's a great message. I 100% agree with. Okay, and then just to end off now, I was wondering if there was anything else you would like to share with my podcast audience today. It can be anything general or even something specific, just like anything you would like to share.
Yeah, it's kind of just like a wrap up of what I just said, but just remember and know that, you know, the best, you know your body best, and that patient-centered care is currently where, you know, the industry is finally leaning towards, which is probably best, I think. So remember that you as a patient are the most important stakeholder of any stakeholder in treatments and in development in, you know, the pipeline of clinical development of new, you know, gene therapies. You are the most important stakeholder. So, you know, remember that as a patient, you're the most important stakeholder in any treatment. Also remember that we always beat the odds every single day. So there's no reason to live in fear. And, you know, honestly, I'm looking forward to seeing, you know, everybody going out there fearlessly and just, you know, advocating for their lives and living their lives, because there's no point in living in fear, because they told me I was going to die a year ago. And, you know, I'm still here. They never know. They just make these rude guesses, you know, when they have very bad algorithms, which don't really take into account our lives. So don't listen to them when they give you some kind of answer like, oh, you're only going to live for 5 years. Don't listen to that. They don't know what they're talking about. If that was true, I'd already be gone, and it's not. So, you know, don't listen to what they have to say with that stuff, because they're always very – they just love to put numbers on people, which I feel like is very rude. And, you know, advocate for yourself. Remember that you know yourself best, and remember that you're advocating for your life in the end. And you're standing up for other people that can't stand up for themselves as well, of course.
Mm-hmm. All right, so I would just like to thank you, Robin, so much for joining me today and sharing your story and really helping me advocate and both spread awareness for rare diseases and conditions. So just thank you for joining me today.
Oh.